Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review.
On today's episode, episode number 198, entitled, How to Stop Aging, Grow Taller, Build Muscles Without Lifting Weights, and Reverse Almost All Disease Using Gene Therapy, I chat with Liz Parrish. Liz Parrish is a humanitarian, entrepreneur, innovator, and a leading voice for genetic cures. In today's episode, Liz talks about gene therapy and the remarkable new advances in this technology over the last few years. She dives into how it works, what's currently possible, and what will be possible in a very short time. Liz talks about what diseases may be reversed and eliminated altogether in the very near future, how she's been able to build muscle without exercising, and how she plans to dramatically lower, if not end, aging once and for all. If you're wondering how you can become a superhuman in the next few years and grow taller, stronger, faster, and just look downright sexier by changing and injecting specific genes, check this episode out now. You are going to absolutely love it. Hey, I don't want to give too much away, but I will say this. On next week's episode, I will be giving you an exact date, time, and schedule for the upcoming YouTube channel that we are launching here at Elite Man. So I dropped a couple Easter eggs over the last few weeks if you're on the Elite Man newsletter, and you probably have an idea that we're coming out with a channel soon. But I haven't announced it on this podcast yet. By the way, that's another reason to get on the Elite Man newsletter. You get all the updates first before anybody else does. So I did drop a few hints on the newsletter, and the exact date, time, and schedule will be officially announced next week. So tune in for sure on next week's episode on the Elite Man Podcast, and you will get the update there. Also, make sure you sign up for the Elite Man newsletter, because that will be the first place that you'll get the information. But if you don't sign up for the letter, make sure you tune into next week's episode, because we will be announcing the exact schedule, date, and time for the upcoming Elite Man YouTube videos. And I'm so excited about this. It's totally different format than the podcast, but it's equally awesome and incredible and helpful for you as a listener. So I think you're really going to enjoy this. You might even love it more than the podcast. I don't want to give away too much, but I'm having so much fun recording these videos, and I'm very excited to share it with you. So stay tuned for next week's episode, where I will be announcing the exact date, time, and schedule, and be ready to watch me on film. It is awesome. It is incredible. It is exciting, and I can't wait to share it with you all. So I'll talk to you next week and make sure I share that information with you about Elite Man and YouTube. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is Liz Parrish from BioViva-Science.com. Liz, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm really excited. As I mentioned to you a couple moments ago, my friend David Krantz, a few episodes back actually, he's a podcast guest, is now a friend of mine, mentioned your name and mentioned that you're doing some really incredible work as far as gene therapy goes and being able to manipulate our genes to doing some pretty impressive things. And I think right now you're doing some incredible work, and even in the future, it looks very bright for what we can do. So for those who may not have heard of the work you're doing, Liz, can you just take a minute or two and just talk about what it is exactly that you do with gene therapy and BioViva?
Yeah, sure. So with BioViva, what we're looking at is genes that create optimal health. And so, you know, it's the weird and wild future of genetic engineering. And it's really exciting because today we're looking at genes that regenerate cells. This is one of the areas that we're interested in, is actually defeating biological aging. So what does biological aging do to us over time? It creates the diseases or the symptoms of aging, which are things like heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, and, you know, COPD and organ failure. So these are the big killers today. And we're looking at genes that upregulate regeneration in the cell and make it so that those cells actually create a homeostasis in the body that will help people live longer and better. And where the future of this technology goes is into amazing areas. So, you know, first we'll look to defeat these diseases that are plaguing society today, that actually most of the population dies from. And as a matter of fact, by 2050, most of the world's population, actually, the biggest risk factor of death is aging itself. But we'll also expand these technologies into, you know, what's called human enhancement. And I think that that's an area that gets interest as well.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, it's incredible, like I said, what you're doing right now and the work you're doing. And just the more I dig into it, for one, it's very complex. There's a lot to it, so it's a lot for me to take in, just trying to kind of digest all the information myself. That's why I'm really excited to get you on to kind of help it, you know, dumb it down for guys like me who are trying to figure it out and even have like a little bit of an understanding of it. But when you look at things like this, you hear terms like gene therapy, you hear gene editing, cutting, snipping, the CRISPR technology. What's the difference between all that stuff and then, of course, gene therapy and what you guys are doing? Because from what you told me before we jumped on, gene therapy is kind of like the umbrella of it all. But how is it, what is gene editing and cutting, and how does that differ from what you're doing?
Yeah, and let's make it really simple for anyone who's listening. So number one, the blueprint of your body is held in the chromosomes, and the chromosomes are held in your cells. And chromosomes are made up of genes. And so we have coding genes and non-coding genes. And as we learn more about genes, we find out that non-coding genes affect coding genes. But coding genes make proteins. So, and you're a product of those proteins. All of who you are is essentially a product of the proteins that created you. They're your eye color. We understand that they may have more to do with our personalities than we thought before. They have to do with your stature and your skin color and various other things. So those genes make up you. So why would we want to look at this blueprint? Well, the blueprint, within the blueprint lies a lot of things like risk for disease and outcomes of lifespan and health. So what is gene therapy? So yeah, gene therapy is an over-encompassing area that a lot of things fall under, including gene therapy that we think of is insertion of genes, which is what our company does. We look at genes that create benefits. They create proteins that create benefits to your body, and we insert them into the cell. Gene editing is when we actually take tools like CRISPR, which has been really popular, but there have been other gene editing technologies around for many years. CRISPR just is less expensive and much more efficient. And what it does is actually cuts out faulty genes. And we can either replace that with a healthy gene, or we can just essentially cut the gene out. It gives us the ability also to put genes into the genome where we want them to be. Maybe we have exact target sites that we would like to put this gene, so it's not in a high risk, what we'd call oncogenic area, an area that might create cancer. And so with gene therapy itself, there are also, through the methods, the different delivery methods, ways to deliver genes that integrate genes. And they integrate genes into known areas, but it's not exactly considered editing. So all of these technologies fall under what we call gene therapy. And essentially what it means for you is the ability to potentially change your gene set with editing, or just add advantageous genes to the sort of outcome that we want to create in your body, a predictable outcome.
Okay, so that makes a lot more sense. So it seems to, like you said, that the gene editing and the cutting and using the technologies like CRISPR, which seems to be one of the best and safest, is sort of the future, but it's not quite ready to be applicable to mass use. Like all the injections and injecting favorable genes is kind of where you're at right now.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that the gene editing is coming a long way really fast, but the trials in it are still limited, whereas regular gene therapy, the way that we think of it, is just inserting genes that then upregulate their proteins without, you know, fanciful editing and things like that, has been around for decades. And so it is just progressively getting better and better. And of course, CRISPR is coming up right behind it. And as soon as the predictability level goes up and the off-target effects go down, it will simply just, you know, be ready for prime time, and the we call it genetic surgeons will begin, you know, the mass production of these type of technologies.
So is that something that you're looking to get into at some point soon, when it gets like a little safer and it's actually more effective?
Oh, yeah. As soon as we have really good results with gene editing through the CRISPR modalities, our company will definitely be right there. I mean, we are actually set up to deliver multiple genes right now, and just using a different technology to deliver them is no problem for our specialists.
Okay. And by the way, what is your background? You're a scientist. Would you call yourself a scientist, a chemist, a researcher, something? You know, what is it specifically?
I would call myself a citizen scientist. So I have taken quite a few biology courses and chemistry courses, but I didn't finish my degree in that. And as a matter of fact, right now I'm working on an MBA whilst I run this company. My background is really in being an entrepreneur, and this probably is the biggest challenge of my life, is to actually take a nascent technology and try to bring it mainstream, because it really fits my humanitarian backdrop. So, you know, I have definitely volunteered my time for lots of activities in the humanities area. So, you know, this really is just the calling of my life right now, and I'm looking, you know, to see this come to fruition and then move on from that. What I had volunteered my time for 2 years, from 2011 to 2013, as an advocate for the use of stem cells and for stem cell education, and had really immersed myself in regenerative medicine during that time. And then in 2013, my son was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which landed me into Children's Hospital. And actually, I saw firsthand how these technologies, as promising as stem cells, weren't being used in people who really need them right now. And that there were kids in the hospital, you know, there that weren't going to live for very much longer. And when I asked around about it, I asked, you know, the doctors and the nurses, you know, what was the problem with translation of medicine? You know, they just kind of called it experimental medicine and said they didn't use it in humans. But I was really quite shocked that we let people die rather than giving them access to technology. And so at that point, I spun out of the stem cell area and started looking for genetic cures, because I had felt for a long time that that probably would be the biggest benefit. And my goal was to get people access to this type of technology so that we weren't really dying of risk aversion, that we were taking chances, you know, measured chances, in order to create a better world. Because there are a lot of people, you know, 100,000 people died today of biological aging. And any of those people could have been a candidate to spearhead great technology, not only for themselves, but for these kids. So when we talk about things like treating biological aging and all of the genes that we look at, actually every one of those genes has a use in childhood disease as well. Biological aging is a chronic disease. It's called a non-communicable disease. It has the basis in multi-gene dimension. It's kind of, you know, some people think it's programmed into the cells. I think it's just a product of evolution, you know, not really addressing the issues of living very long, but definitely living long enough to procreate. But through genetics, you know, we can solve these problems. And the power of gene therapy just in the last few years is astronomical. We see eight cures in the pipeline for monogenic disease, meaning a single gene mutation. And we're seeing a huge rise in chronic disease coming to the forefront. So just in the last few years, three treatments for monogenic disease, a single gene mutation disease, have come out that are complete cures with one treatment. And this is the type of technology that we really want to work towards, a world that comes and gets a therapy and doesn't get a disease, that's not dependent on a pill bottle and remembering to take dosages every day. By addressing the genome, we can actually create, maybe not the perfect, but the optimal human.
Wow, this is actually incredibly fascinating for me. And I hope at some point you can switch out the ADD gene I probably have, because I'm going to kind of jump all over the place with this, because there's so many things I want to talk about. But all right, so the eight cures for monogenic disease, what are those diseases? What are the diseases that it's already been able to cure or proven that in like the last year or so that it can cure?
Well, I can talk about some of those. I'm in a situation where I don't have everything right in front of me. So now we're playing a memory game.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the three treatments that were passed. So that is for severe combined immune deficiency, or what you might know as boy in the bubble disease, has effectively been cured with gene therapy. One form of rare congenital blindness has now been cured by gene therapy, and lipoprotein lipase deficiency has now been cured by gene therapy. And then in the pipeline, we have hemophilia A, we have hemophilia B, we have sickle cell anemia, and a couple of other rare disorders that are not coming off the top of my head, but show really significant promise. And this is just in a few short years. So you can see that, you know, this is the biggest change that we've seen in healthcare since antibiotics and immunizations.
Wow, that is incredible. And that's with the techniques that you're using, with the more of the injection stuff as opposed to the gene editing and the cutting?
Yeah, so just to clarify, so all of those technologies, all of the gene therapy technologies, are injections, unless they're done ex vivo. Ex vivo means you take cells out of the body, you genetically modify them, and then you inject them back into the body. So you have an injection process no matter what. And they're all delivered by what's called a viral vector. And so what we do in research and development, and right now BioViva just started, we just started research and development at Rutgers University on a new viral vector that can get multiple genes in at one time. But what we do is we look for a virus that really doesn't cause much immune reaction in the body. And then we basically strip it of its ability to make someone sick. So it cannot replicate. And the area of replication would have been its genetic information. It would be the information that it would have delivered. But that's all taken out. And what we do is we either put CRISPR, or we put, in what we do in mainstream gene therapy, is we just put the gene and the promoter. A promoter is a little snippet of information that tells the gene how many times to make a protein. So we package that all into what used to be a virus, but now it's just called a viral vector. It's just the part of the virus that knows how to dock with the cell and deliver the information. And then whether you're doing CRISPR or you're doing genes, you inject that into the body, and then the viral vector is actually specialized to only attach to certain tissue types so that we can deliver genes just to specific areas of the body. And then it delivers those genes, and then that gene upregulates the new protein, and that changes you. And so when you're thinking about one thing that your listeners might be interested in, considering the name of the podcast, is one of the known technologies that's already been in humans, and here's one of the crossovers with an aging population in children. It has been used to treat muscular dystrophy, and it's called a myostatin inhibitor, and it's a gene called follistatin. And what it does is follistatin goes into the cells, it makes a protein, and it blocks something called myostatin. And what happens is your muscle mass increases. So that's the reason that we would use a gene like that in muscular dystrophy with children, is because we want to increase their muscle mass. They're dying of muscle atrophy. And it, in fact, it does that. There's some incredible videos of there's one in particular of a child before and after therapy that's just astounding, that I can share with you if you remind me to. In the first video, he can barely climb up a few stairs without literally just falling flat. And in the next one, he's running stairs. And
wow.
So this gene, we want to also use it for an aging population. So sarcopenia is muscle loss over time. And this has been in 30 patients, and we know it works. So we know that it does increase muscle mass. So this is one type of gene therapy that can bring you to your superhero you, or more likely just keep you active as you grow older. And that's a really important part of helping the economy and helping to decrease the amount of spending that we personally spend on healthcare as we grow older. So that's one of the gene therapies that's a working gene therapy that has enough data on it that we feel is ready for humans.
Okay, I was going to save a couple of these questions for later on, because I want to dive back into some of the more of the science of it. But real quick, how does, or can this, I should say, can this stuff right now, the gene that you're using to help people with muscular dystrophy, can that be used by guys out there who want to gain more mass, muscle mass, and, you know, get stronger, like biohack, that kind of thing? Or is that like possible?
Yeah. It is a product that is available now. So again, BioViva USA is a bioinformatics company, but we have partners that people can go to, and they can access medical doctors, and they can discuss their condition. And if the medical doctor feels that they are a candidate for a therapy, they can get access to that therapy, and that can help improve their life.
Okay. So, and is there any side effects to something like that? Like, I'm thinking guys who take, say, human growth hormone, HGH, or obviously testosterone, steroids, they put on a tremendous amount of mass. Is that bad? Is there any side effects potentially? I mean, this kind of things that you're doing seems a lot safer than, you know, taking steroids from the guy at the gym, but there also can be side effects to gaining like a lot of muscle mass and obviously doing like gene implantation into the body. Is there anything like that goes with that you're aware of?
Right. So the genes that we look at specifically have some amount of data on them to ensure that they're genes that are based in longevity. So we're looking at genes that make you healthier, longer, better. And so that's what we see in the animal studies of that gene. And we don't see detriments in humans with that gene. And we have a couple people in our company who've taken the gene therapy. The longest person who's taken the gene therapy is probably 6 or 7 years, and he's seen nothing but benefit. It's a human gene that naturally is upregulated when you're younger. So we wouldn't want to do a gene that had negative health effects, and we probably wouldn't do the gene therapy and the dose that would make a mega person, right? So that would, you know, that would be probably an enormous amount of the gene therapy. We're still working on titration, which means how much to give for how much outcome. And it really should be in the long run more beneficial than taking many of the hormones that have led to some of the detriments and early deaths of bodybuilders. So again, it would probably be a moderate dose if you would see muscle mass gain, but it probably, if somebody wants to be like He-Man or something like that, they would still be supplementing their diet with different things that I couldn't suggest, but they definitely have the right to do. And they just might need less of it, would be my guess. But again, I can't diagnose, nor can I, you know, make suggestions for the general public at large. I can just tell you what we're doing.
Yeah, that is pretty incredible, though, just hearing that. And I know, you know, that's not really your specialty or anything like that. But you know, the fact that you're even doing stuff like that, and that it's possible, or even right now, is pretty incredible. And I actually had a Mr. Olympia, six-time Mr. Olympia, Dorian Yates on the show a few months back. That guy's massive. And when you say things like this, it's like immediately triggers those thoughts of, wow, this is like the future of bodybuilding. This is going to be like, I'm telling you, guys are going to be doing this stuff. If it's safe, you know, hopefully they don't take it to the extreme, which, you know, there'll always be people that do that. But people will be doing this in some point in the near future where they're taking these genes and getting, you know, that little advantage.
Well, that's right. And we want to be there to make sure that when people do this, like when you bring up words like biohacking, we want to make sure that when they do it, that they are doing it with a medical doctor, and that we're gathering the data on what the benefits and the detriments were to the therapies. And so that's, you know, that's our platform is built essentially for biotech success. It's built to get early data on therapeutics and so that they can translate to the population quicker. We think of it as a triangle. So number one, giving access to patients who are in high need or desire modification. Number two, getting that data back to biotech companies so they can see how well their drugs are performing. And number three, helping investors know where to put their money, having that early data so that when you go to raise $1 billion to go through the FDA, you know your drug is going to pass. So, you know, how do we help is, you know, we create a safe place in order to do these type of technologies only in so far. You have to take your own risk, but only in so far that we have a medical doctor and we have trained research specialists that can help to validate the technology that you're taking so that, you know, people aren't just taking these in their home and then, you know, saying, oh, there was benefits or there were detriments. Well, we don't really know. And we don't want you just, if you just go to a doctor's office and do it, well, we still don't know the outcome, but the beauty is that BioViva USA uses their bioinformatics program and researchers, academic researchers, to actually understand what's going on with you. And this is something that, you know, we learned the hard way because of the launch of the company. We learned a lot about data and what to do and what not to do in order to have a valid, what we might call, experiment. And that was in 2015 when I started the company, taking the first two gene therapies to combat chronic, or what you might call, aging, and chronic disease or biological aging. So we learned a lot about, you know, how important it is to have a protocol and to manage the data so that it can be reviewed and actually used as scientific evidence as to whether a therapy is working or not.
So how safe are those things? I know I've heard, I think David might even have mentioned it, that they have like those at-home kits of gene therapy now. And is that something that you guys do, and how safe are they if you don't have those?
No, we wouldn't do any sort of at-home kits. Everything with BioViva is done with medical doctors, and again, in under, you know, the research of academics. We don't do anything like that, because there's a couple of reasons that we wouldn't want to. Number one, we have no idea what the outcomes are going to be or how well you're going to track them. And so having a doctor's network actually helps us keep up with your health. Number two, if I don't know what the kits involve, but if they involve viral vectors, all you're doing is giving yourself an immunity if they're in low doses. You're just going to give yourself an immunity to getting a therapy that you may need in the future. So what I mean by that is when you go for a gene therapy and you have a viral vector deliver a gene to you, your body, the idea is to have the least amount of immune response as possible. What we do is we suppress the immune system. But if your body detects that it's seen it, then the next time you might want to get a gene therapy with that same viral vector, you might have an immune response, which means that you're not going to accept the genes. So we are 100% for autonomy and agency. I believe you have the right to do with your body whatever you want to, but I suggest that if you're going to do it, we should do it with technology that we know is going to have the biggest effect for today's outcome, and you do it with a medical doctor and researchers backing up the work. And that's going to cost more. Yeah, it is. But it's the right way to do things so that, you know, we can move forward with science and your data can help cure somebody's disease in the future.
Crickstart makes organic snacks with cricket powder and plant-based ingredients. This cricket powder is made from organically farmed, free-range crickets. Their other ingredients include foods like seed butters, hemp, chocolate, and dates that are all organic too. The bars are delicious, better than so many other protein/meal replacement bars I've had, and have absolutely none of that chalky taste you usually get in those bars. I actually really love these things. And yes, I know what you're thinking, Justin, seriously, crickets, dude? What's the deal with that? And trust me, I thought the same thing at first, but once I tried my first bar, I was absolutely amazed at how good these things really were, and after that, it became completely normal for me to put down a few of these bars throughout the day, and also some of their delicious cricket pack crackers for that matter too. Quickstart bars have a very balanced macronutrient profile, so they make a good pre- or post-workout snack, or even just a snack at the office or on the go. I was blown away by the nutrition facts panel on these products. You can check them out for yourself on the quickstart.com website. What's great about crickets is that they're high in protein, twice as much as beef or chicken, with all 9 essential amino acids necessary for muscle growth and repair, among other things, and in vitamin B12 and iron. So they provide all the nutrition you get from meat without many of their downsides. For the same amount of protein compared to beef, crickets require 12 times less feed, 2,000 times less water, thousands of times less land, and they emit 100 times less greenhouse gases. There are over 40 crickets in every Crickstart bar and over 100 in every cracker bag. And trust me when I tell you this, they taste delicious. Visit Crickstart.com right now and get your very own Crickstart bars and snacks and use the coupon code ELITE at checkout to get 20% off your purchase. Again, that's Crickstart.com and the coupon code is ELITE for 20% off. You mentioned that you work with a lot of outside companies and companies specifically outside the USA. Has there been a problem with the FDA? I know they're very strict on a lot of new drugs and experimental therapies and things like that. How has your experience been with the FDA? And are you like worried about them potentially shutting this type of thing down and maybe even, you know, stopping your work with other doctors from other countries who are able to kind of take that to actually help the patients and sort of fulfill what you're doing?
Well, we sure hope that they don't. We have created our system of getting patients access in a completely legal route. It is made to actually be able to bear and sustain any complaints. And you know, I think that there may be rumors that we have, but BioViva has actually never gotten a warning from the US FDA. So we are not going to go forward concerned about that, but what we are going to go forward is prepared. So we want to show them that our system is the better system. I'd actually like our system of how we call it a probe system, how we're actually analyzing drugs and outcome and giving early access, therefore expediting the use of life-saving medicine. We'd like them to see how we plan to do that or how we're doing that in the next year or two and show them the data and actually work with them to design a better system, a better regulatory system that passes safer drugs in a faster manner to people who need them now.
Yeah, in a way, actually, you guys are helping them out because you're showing things like in real people, actual, not just, you know, animal studies, and it's not taking X amount of years longer. You guys are getting things done now and showing it in real people that it's with real people that it's working. So you're kind of, you know, taking a lot of work off their hands, I think.
I think that it is a really good route to go. And actually, the idea of going offshore, well, actually, a lot of clinical trials, over 60% of clinical trials run through the FDA are done offshore because it's less expensive. So don't think that offshore means less quality. It's definitely quality. But the idea of running a study in order to get the patient data of 20, 30 patients for, let's say, Alzheimer's, we're running a study for that. We're going to be running a study for type 2 diabetes in about a year. We're running, you know, the studies on our sarcopenia to see if we can predictably increase muscle mass in people over the age of 50. So when you come back to the U.S. and you actually have study data, it can help expedite research, and it will certainly help get the investment that companies need in order to get these drugs launched. I want our drugs, or all of these drugs, to go through a regulatory service and get approval. I just want people to have access to them now and help us pioneer these technologies so that they get there faster.
Going back to the genes, how do you find the right genes for different things? And, you know, especially the multi-pronged chronic diseases like Alzheimer's, like what gene are you going to be testing in Alzheimer's? And how do you go about figuring out that it's just that one gene?
Right. So in you know, when we look at a chronic disease, we know that it will probably be multiple genes to solve it. For instance, biological aging. When we look at biological aging, instead of looking at the endpoints, you know, what is happening down the road? Well, you get wrinkly and you lose your kidney function and your brain doesn't work as well. And you get atrophy in the brain and your liver gets, you know, a certain amount of fatty deposits or whatever those things are. Those are all downstream effects of aging. So the new diseases that we'll be talking about in the future, when everyone's ready to make a radical change that actually is for the betterment of humankind, we'll be looking at what's called the hallmarks of aging. So the actual diseases that are happening in you that drive the symptoms, like the things that we're diagnosed with, are things like mitochondrial dysfunction, telomere attrition, glycation, which is proteins that build up between cells and they affect another hallmark, which is cellular communication, stem cell depletion. So as genomic instability, so as you grow older in the future, you know, we'll say we're going to give you a therapy. And it's, let's say we give you a telomerase inducing therapy, and it's going to help with genomic instability. It's going to help with stem cell depletion. It's going to help with mitochondrial function, but you're still going to have glycation end products. So after that therapy, we'll look at giving you another one. And so after you take your therapy that's, let's say, hits, you know, four or five of the hallmarks of aging, you know, we'll say, well, you're still dying of glycation and, you know, intracellular cell communication or whatever it is. So these will be the new diseases that step up because they're actually what's driving almost all disease on the planet. These are the sort of the hallmarks, the dysfunctions that are happening at the cellular level. And I do believe that over the next 5-10 years, we're going to find one or two more. So our genes that we specifically are looking at target these hallmarks of aging. They create regeneration in these areas of the body. And in animal models and in human cell models, they are the genes that actually regenerate cells to acting youthful again. So for instance, we're going to be opening up in the next couple months to a gene therapy for chronic kidney disease. So this would be, you know, hopefully would help people on dialysis. We don't know, but we'll see. And that would be Clotho. So that's a gene called Clotho. It actually is implicated in regeneration in the whole body. It's considered to be a good target for whole body anti-aging. Helps with neural degradation and various traits across the body. So we will use Clotho for kidneys, and then as it shows successful there, then we will start offering bigger offerings in anti-aging. But with Alzheimer's, we're looking at telomerase induction. So what is telomerase induction? Telomeres are the base pair repetitive ends of your chromosomes. And when you're conceived, you have about 15,000 base pairs. When you're born, you have about 10,000. And we know that when you're in your diagnosis stage of end-stage disease, you have about 5,000 base pairs. We believe as they get shorter, it leads to genomic instability and a lot of the problems that are associated with biological aging. Our goal in Alzheimer's, for instance, would be to target the glial cells, lengthen the telomeres. The glial cells outnumber the neural cells, which are really affected, directly affected by Alzheimer's. They outnumber the neural cells by about 50-1. The glial cells are sort of the cleaners. They're the helpers. They help support the neural cells. And our hope is that if they are functioning at a youthful level, that the neural cells will get the support we need. And we hope to, you know, maybe stave off Alzheimer's, hopefully get some cognitive function back in mid-stage Alzheimer's patients, and maybe in early stage be able to stave off the disease for longer. When we look at something like type 2 diabetes, we're looking at a gene that decreases white fat and increases brown fat in the body. It's actually a gene that helps mitochondria become more proficient. And mitochondria are like the energy cells within your cells. They're thought to be a bacteria that integrated into eukaryotic cells many years ago. Let's yep. just say that. And they are you know, kind of responsible for the powerhouses of complex life. And if you actually regenerate and restore them, you know, you increase power, the power of the cell, the energy of the body, and that increases a lot of functions and helps with things like type 2 diabetes. So in all of these genes, we're specifically targeting a gene that would have a beneficial effect to the whole organism, would increase health span and hopefully lifespan as well, and keep a more active, happier, healthier future ahead for the patients.
So is that one of the big things that you do, is identifying what the genes are? I mean, I know the Human Genome Project has gone on for the last like 20, 30 years. Are you working with those people, or have you used that information to target specific genes?
What's really interesting, I'll answer that in two parts. What's interesting is, you know, we're so interested in the human genome, and what actually is happening in the human genome is going to take many more years and decades, maybe even, to find out like how genes interplay with other genes. And we're so interested that we just launched a genome sequencing product this month, and we're going to be launching whole genome sequencing so we can help patients get even more information to us, or people who are not ready for a gene therapy but just really want to get interested in what's happening with their genome. I think everyone should be really, really interested in what's going on with the genome. But as far as the products that we're using, we, outside of our new deal with Rutgers University of creating this new viral vector that will, you know, like right now we're looking at four different genes for health. This new viral vector can get them all in at once. That's what we're really excited about, is the ability to instead of, you know, having people come in for one gene therapy after another and having immune issues, you know, getting them all in there at once. But what we do outside of that research and development is no research and development, because it's really costly. It takes decades to really understand. And right now, what we do is meta-analysis. What genes have been in research for a very long time, which of them predictably work, which of them have some amount of human data, and so which ones are we comfortable going forward with? And because gene therapy has sat around as a nascent technology for a couple decades, there are quite a few of them that really show promise and don't show detriment in animal models. And so those are the ones that we are cherry picking out. And some of these actually have other companies behind them, and we kind of white label them in a sense so that they don't take any liability or responsibility, and we just get the human data on how well they're working. So we don't do any early, you know, we don't look at the human genome and go, you know, I mean, so hopefully, you know, 20 years down the road, we'll be doing a lot of that, but we don't, you know, rub our chin and go, I wonder what that gene's doing, because that's just too scary. You don't want to just mess with any gene. There's some genes, you know, that you wouldn't want to upregulate.
Did I hear correct, too, that you've been able to do some of this gene therapy on yourself?
Yeah. So so my son was diagnosed in 2013, and I went around the world to conferences looking for technology that could help kids. And I told you I'd already been working in stem cells for a couple of years. And I already during that time had gotten very interested in genetics. And I was thinking, you know, we could cure these kids with these genetic therapies. I mean, this is the way to go. But I didn't know anything about treating biological aging until I landed myself at a conference in the UK in Cambridge called held by an organization called the SENS Foundation, which is Aubrey de Grey heads the SENS Foundation, and it is a foundation that is looking for treatment for aging. And I really was quite skeptical, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm just trying to help kids, you know, lived long enough to, you know, see all of the things that I have. What is this treating aging? And then it just took me a short amount of time to realize how many people were suffering from aging, that nobody actually likes to die, and that these people were all candidates to help find cures for kids and potentially help themselves significantly. So after that, I became really intrigued that, you know, that we didn't have to look at the daunting task of starting a company that was like, we want to treat kids. We could actually start a company that says, we want to treat an aging population, and we really want to help them, and that's really going to help everybody. And I came home from these conferences, and everyone said they just needed money. And so I said, oh, I'm going to go out and find money. So I started a company called Biotrove Investments. I started a podcast. I had a podcast for a while. And I was doing education with the podcast and reaching out to anyone I thought that might fund these technologies. And I got to meet some really incredible people with a lot of money. And every one of them told me, Liz, if you can prove it works, I'll put my money into it. And, you know, to me, the clock is always ticking. You know, these kids, you know, every day we're losing kids, we're losing adults, we're, you know, it's really quite devastating once you start looking into loss. And so in 2015, I said, okay, I'll start a company and I'm going to prove it works or it doesn't work. Each one of these therapies, one by one. And I looked for investors in late 2014, and I just said, look, we've already got our eye on the most promising two therapies right now. One is the telomerase inducer, and the other one is the myostatin inhibitor. So lengthening the ends of your telomeres so that your cells have more cell divisions. I don't know if I made that clear. What it does is helps the cell have more cell division and helps it genomically stay stable. And then the myostatin inhibitor increases your muscle mass. And I went to about 10 investors and I said, look, I would even take it myself. I will take it myself if you'll fund the company. And people looked at me like I was crazy. And then I got on the phone with one guy and he said, I'll do it. And I said, wow. And so we had the gene therapies made. They were late. You can imagine I was really anticipating, you know, rubbing my hands together going, oh boy, here it comes. And in September of 2015, I took the two first gene therapies to treat biological aging. And it was cool. And it was an exciting time. And it was biohacking at its best, with a medical doctor and, you know, thinking that we were collecting all of the necessary data for the company as much as possible. And that was really how we launched the company.
Wow, that's an awesome story. So how did it work for you? Did you feel any different after taking it?
Yeah, so what happened, you know, that, so essentially it was mostly a safety test, but we did get some results. So we took before and after MRI imaging. And before taking the treatment, I worked out at least 5 days a week. I ran probably 30, 35 miles a week. I did a lot of different workout proponents. And after, when we took the imaging a year later, because of the news and because I got invited to get on a plane constantly to talk to this government or do a talk here or explain to these people, you know, what I thought the future of these technologies would be, I wasn't working out at all. And we saw muscle mass gain. And that was cool. We saw in different points after the treatment, a 50% reduction in triglyceride levels, which means better heart health. We saw a six-fold reduction in my C-reactive protein, which means less inflammation in my body. And we know inflammation is a driver of cancer and disease. We saw a reduction in my blood glucose levels by about 25%, which is what we would expect. That's why we think that it's probably a good combinatorial therapy for type 2 diabetes, because when you increase muscle mass, you increase insulin sensitivity and it decreases white fat. So even my muscles were bigger, but my white fat was less, and that was cool. Again, without exercise, so. We saw those changes. Now, we didn't get what we had hoped. We didn't get, Liz's body turning into a 20-year-old body and, getting to jump up and down and say, we have the cure for all disease. But I really did it for the world. I did it to make a better world. We didn't know what the outcome would be, and I was happy to participate in it, and I'm still happy to participate in it. I wrote when I came home right after doing it that, I didn't know if I'd live, because nobody had ever done it, but I was still really glad I did it. And so I was leaving as much writing behind me as I possibly could. And look, just like the animal studies, I'm fine, and actually really healthy. And, and my telomeres lengthened by about 30 years, I believe. No, they lengthened by about 30 years, because when I had them tested, they were the approximate length of the population would be the approximate length of a 65-year-old, even though I was only in my early 40s. When we last got them tested, they have incrementally only lengthened over testings. And when I last got them tested, they were at the average age of a 30, 35-year-old. And that's only my T lymphocytes. So those are the white blood cells, but because that's all they measure. But going forward, we'll try to do better than that. But that's still the standard test for telomere length. But that was pretty cool. But I believe now that it's going to be probably higher doses of therapy, and it's going to be multiple genes. And so I don't think one or two genes is going to cure it. It's going to be multiple genes, and that's why we've put our money behind the delivery method of multiple genes.
What's the one gene that you did before?
I did two genes. I did HTERT, which is the telomere lengthener, and I did follistatin, which is the muscle builder.
Okay, so you basically combined the two that you were like highly researching and thought probable to be success.
Yeah, so, and we took them in two different ways. So the follistatin is delivered in a delivery method that delivers directly to certain muscles, so you can have certain muscle groups treated. And the telomerase inducer is more of a systemic delivery.
Okay. And what would you change if you went back and did this test again in the next couple of years? What would you add to the genes?
I want to try many more genes. I would probably have done a higher dose of the telomerase inducer. I would have we learned a lot as a company. We would have delivered it in a different way. I would have taken more of the muscle enhancer as well. I would have added the other two genes that we're looking at. We have actually 10 candidate genes, but we're bringing four of them to market. And I think that I would have done a greater variety. I'm really in love with Clotho. So I always say bow down to the Clotho goddess, because Clotho is named after the goddess of the thread of life. And it really does show some benefit. And I think over, the next 10 years or so, we'll find some other genes that really strongly drive regeneration. But then you still have to prove that they'll be relatively safe. And we think that these ones, we can't guarantee anything. We can't guarantee anyone's safety. But we can say that the meta-analysis shows that these ones have, the best research on them for use right now.
What does that Clotho one do again? And then also, what are the real actual potentials of like a disaster happening? Like you said, you were actually scared that you might not actually make it. You might not live through your experiment. And what are the real dangers of that? And just on a side note, what is that Clotho gene?
So Clotho is a gene that actually you can say it kind of plays off two other genes, FGF23 and FGF21, and they both upregulate regeneration. So Clotho has been shown to be great with skin, the brain, and just really most tissues in the body. So it's a tissue that it upregulates fibroblast growth factor, and that creates just a healthier cell that's doing the work that it needs to not get damaged.
Okay.
And then as far as the risk, well, you know, I mean, I had my concern, of course. It was a first in use therapy. It's a concern that anyone should think of, especially, you know, in everyday life. I mean, life is risky, right? So, you know, your biggest risk is right now is probably driving your car. But, and, you know, people die taking their prescriptions, you know, and actually aging comes with 100% guarantee of mortality. So, you know, what we do and how we pioneer technology, you know, we do have to realize that every technology is risky. But how we've mitigated that is, obviously, we've given you the first in use human. We've got other humans now that have telomerase induction in them. Myostatin inhibitor, the muscle enhancer, is already in other humans. So what we do is we look at the meta-analysis, what has happened in animals and other humans, because we don't want a negative outcome. So we're working with the best technology possible. And then, you know, gene therapy has changed a lot. So gene therapy in 1999 killed a boy. And it was the viral vector that they were using was the reason. He had an immune reaction to the viral vector, and it's vastly a vector that's not used anymore. He was actually too sick to take the therapy to begin with, and they shouldn't have used it, but they did. And it had one bad outcome. But, you know, here's a very probing question when we talk about risk. That one person dying from gene therapy shut down an industry for about 20 years. But how many lives could we have saved with gene therapy in that amount of time? So since then, it radically shifted to viral vectors, again, that don't create an immune response. And that's why, and if they do, it's very minimal. And that's why we're developing these new technologies. So all the technologies that are used today in humans have a very low immune response because of that person. So that was a really great response to dealing with a tragic situation that we wish wouldn't have happened. We certainly don't want another one of those tragic situations. So you can bet on our partners' side, the people, our partner companies that actually treat patients, you can bet they do not want any negative outcomes. And we're doing our best to ensure that doesn't happen. But if we're so risk adverse that we do nothing, we are guaranteed to die, and we're just too damn smart of a species to do that.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, real quick, how much in the future, like in the next year, couple of years, are you going to get back and try the gene therapy out on yourself again?
Oh, I'm actually really ready, because I'm pretty tired of being a test subject. And the only reason that I didn't explore other technologies is because I was I was patient zero. I was N equals one of a study, and we were trying to find all of the outcomes of that test. I guess you would call it a conscientious biohacker. I want things done with medical doctors and research teams, especially understanding the difficulty we had after my first test and not having the backup analysis that created the sort of peer review that we needed in order to have it accepted by the medical community. I think it's called champing at the bit. I'm very much into modification and autonomy and my right to do with my body what I want to.
Mm. Love it. Have you heard of MCell, by the way, the stem cell facility in the Ukraine?
No, I haven't.
They're actually supposed to be the number one fetal stem cell facility in the world. I've had a couple guests on the show in the past that talked about them. I just was wondering if you'd heard of their work.
You know, the people that we have, so if you come through Integrative Health Systems, one of our partners, and ask about stem cells, we have a few doctors, and they're doing the, I guess, the umbilical cord stem cells. They're, you know, I guess they're having good outcomes with those, and the body has no immune response. But I don't know anything about the fetal cells. The umbilical cord cells come from, you know, umbilical cord cast off. So they're thrown out after a baby's born. And the beautiful thing is that because the baby is a completely different, it's the same, it's a human. I'm not meaning a different organism in the sense that it's a different species, but it is not of the same tissue or genetics of the mother, right? So the umbilical cord does all of these amazing things to make sure that it can share information that won't cause an immune reaction, either the mother or the baby. And so that makes that sort of technology really exciting. And it's a natural occurring technology. So I actually talked to many people who have had that done, and they're excited about it. But let me tell you a little bit about genetics. I'm not going on the hard sell here, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about stem cells and a little bit about genetics. And the reason why, when I spent a couple of years working on the nonprofit for stem cells, I absolutely love them. They're like the super Band-Aid. In the future, instead of pulling out a Band-Aid, I hope we pull out a gel and it has our stem cells, and you just rub it on the wound and it heals within a matter of a day rather than multiple days. And it, you know, protects it from infection. And stem cells are amazing with burn victims. They're amazing with growing organs. They just can't be beat. But where we can beat stem cells in genetics is one of the patents we're working on now is actually a patent for, so what makes a stem cell different from other cells in your body? It's the blueprint. It's all of your cells have the exact same genes in them, but some are turned on and some are turned off. And that's why your nose looks like your nose and it doesn't look like your ear. So it's got a blueprint and it tells it what genes to upregulate. In stem cells, there are certain factors that are upregulated. And what they do is they're emitted from the stem cell. So you inject stem cells into the body and they emit all of these proteins that are saying, hey, regenerate, there's damage here, fix it. And so what you see in like ALS patients is you see that they have very low motor function. They take a stem cell therapy, they have better motor function, but then over a matter of weeks, it declines again. Well, with gene therapy, what we can do is for patients in high need like that, the idea of that therapy is to upregulate those factors permanently, so that their body goes into enough regenerative mode that it keeps them healthier for at least a normal lifespan. And so anything that a stem cell can do, I would like to think genetics could do better outside of Band-Aids, growing organs, and burn victims, which are very, very important things. So I think that the technologies are as important, just in different areas.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you're right on that, and I'm really looking forward to see where you take this. You mentioned that, you know, the genes are turned off. We all have the same genes. Is it possible in that sense to gene edit at some point, or, you know, maybe not right now, 10 years, 20, 30 years from now, edit your eye color, grow hair back, grow taller, like change
oh, yeah.
the, is that all, that's all yeah. coming down the line or what?
Well, one of the best use for CRISPR right now is actually just turning on or off a gene that's in your cell already rather than editing one in. So all of your cells have the same gene. So if we want to upregulate one that is turned off naturally in that cell, we could just turn it on with CRISPR technology. So that's really exciting. But the idea of phonetic modification, modifying what you look like is of real interest. And so right now we're really focused on disease. But I always say that, you know, once we've cured disease, we'll turn your eyes purple and your hair green. we'll make sure you're meeting the standard that you really want to. And that will be a very exciting time. And I'm going to tell you something else that, you know, we're writing a book about now, or a chapter in a book about right now, is what I call the phylogenetic grocery store. So that means all of the species on Earth. So when you think about this, we are all made up of the same ingredients. So there are animals that don't get cancer. There are animals that live an incredibly long period of time. There's animals, there are jellyfish that can go from adult to polyp, back and forth genetically. Now, we don't want to do Benjamin Button, but the point is that all of these things are technology. For there are squids that are pentachromats. They can see in billions of colors instead of millions. We would be able to see at night. We'd be able to see different things in the environment that we can't naturally see now. There's all of this, what I call technology, and some of it could be used for enhancement purposes and some could be used for health purposes, but it's really hard to draw the line on what's an enhancement and what's a health benefit at a certain point if there's an advantageous use of the material. And so it sounds really crazy to take genes from another species and put them in a human, but actually in 2016, a company in the U.S. launched a genetic therapy, a trial for a genetic therapy that puts the light sensing genes of an algae into human eyes. So this is technology that's already being embarked upon. So when we look out there, what we're seeing is it's this, you know, if you are cooking a dinner, it's the same ingredients just made in a different way. It's just genetic coding. And in the future, we'll be able to expand into that technology. People are already making synthetic genes, which is arguably very different entirely because maybe they'll make proteins that haven't been seen before. So working with proteins that have been seen before gives us a huge opportunity. And so that's your phylogenetic grocery store.
Yeah, that is incredible. I'm really excited to see where that goes in the next couple of years. It's it just seems amazing. And you know, obviously there's some drawbacks too, or some potential downsides to doing all this stuff. But I think the implications of health and, you know, human performance and even happiness of, you know, people are born a certain way, they don't have this type of look or where they want a certain type of look and they can get it now. It's, you know, it's crazy. It's incredible what you guys can do. And
well, yeah, the idea is to not just have humans that live longer, but to have humans that live happy, meaningful lives and live up to the standard that they want to and get rid of the, you know, the guilt and all of this strange reasoning we have over not wanting to achieve our personal best or thinking that our personal best is somehow limited to the genes that we were given. If somebody is in a wheelchair or incapable and they want to run a marathon or they want to climb a mountain in one day or they want to do this or that, let's just say, who am I to limit that for them? We should have what we want. We should have what we desire. It's going to be a long time getting there, but we really need the support, grassroots movement that people understand that these technologies need to be used. They need to be in people now. We're doing somatic gene cell delivery, so we're not affecting the offspring of these people. So they're not going to go on to have weird kids. we're not doing embryonic editing. Other companies are doing that. We're just trying to help you live to your personal best. And by doing that, we're going to help millions, hundreds of millions of people that have chronic disease today and hopefully cure some of those kids before they die in the hospital.
Yeah, I really hope you guys do. For the guys listening who want to get some of the stuff that you're able to do right now, how do you recommend that they go about getting in touch with either you or what is it, Integrated Health Systems or some of the other companies that you work with?
Right. So on the lower end, if you just want to learn about, let's say you've done a genetic test and you want to take genomic counseling or you want to do some genetic testing or you want to check your DNA methylation, you can go to BioViva, BioViva-science.com and check out what we have. You can also go to that website and go through to our partner or go directly to them. And that's integrated-health-systems.com. And they're the ones that actually help you get access to gene therapies. And then there you just need to give them your health information. You need to consult with a doctor and, you know, be honest about, you know, what you want to do and what you want to do it for. They're very much into autonomy and agency. But of course they have their limits too, because, you know, they want to make sure that they have the safest possible outcome for everyone. But they're very open, consistent, considerate, medical doctors, and they'll talk to you about your concerns or if you're a candidate or when you'll be a candidate or whatever. And so they do counseling on genetic mutations. If you have a genetic mutation, they might have suggestion for a variety of reasons you're unhappy with your life, or they might have some anti-aging type treatment suggestions. Again, these therapies, just as a disclaimer, have very little human use. And so the whole idea of integrative health systems is to build on that human use. So everyone who comes through there needs to understand that they're pioneering technology. You're really a health investor at that point. It's not a citizen science or citizen type of prescription.
Okay. And just to get like a last prediction from you, what do you think? I mean, just, you know, if you had to guess, if, you know, someone was putting a gun to your head kind of thing, like, just, I know it's kind of crazy. it's crazy to think of, but, you know, are we 5 years away, 10 years away from chronic diseases being cured with this type of thing, 20 or, you know, even longer than that? What do you think?
Well, you know, it really has to do with how many people come through and pioneer the technology so that we can get data on what actually works. And so mostly we get, you know, very sick people coming through that are looking for options because they don't have other options. And that's a great use of the technology. I really, you know, the most important thing is human evidence. And as soon as we have the right combination therapy for treating something like, let's say, biological aging, then we're 100% ready to go. And it just depends on the numbers of people going through. As far as like increasing muscle mass, we know we can do that. That's already there. We can lengthen telomeres, at least in some of the cells of your body. We're going to find out if we can regenerate kidneys and the liver and help people with type 2 diabetes. And we'll be doing that all in the next year or two. And if any one of those works, then of course it will, if we take it to a regulatory body, it will take another, you know, 15 years to get it to people. And that's why we want to have both options open so people can always go to locations to get therapies whilst drugs run through the regulatory system.
Okay. So even if, you know, it takes 15 years to get it into this country, if you do it in the next 1 or 2 years, you're going to have it available for other people outside the country.
Absolutely. And we will always try to have therapeutics available for a less costly price. So for instance, you know, Luxturna that just came out, that's for congenital blindness. It's a $850,000 therapy, and that's just really insulting to somebody who's going blind. Wow. We will be able to do therapies for much less than that, although they are still very expensive. They're still very expensive. And so that's why people starting at the low level who can't afford technologies and are not in dire need of them, we just say, just wait. You know, we'll get them moving as fast as possible. And it really is a buy the numbers type of financial situation. So if we treated one person and just was treating their kidney, you know, we might be able to at cost, you know, get it around, let's say, $75,000. That's really expensive. But if we were treating a whole body, it would probably cost, you know, nearly $1 million, because you're doing a one-off therapy. But if we have 10 patients, then we have 100 patients, then we have 10,000 patients, it's a fraction of the cost. It becomes affordable. It becomes, you know, it starts to meet expectations of what you would consider, you know, privatized healthcare, you know, under $50,000.
Wow, that is incredible. Liz, I really do appreciate your time. Thanks so much again for coming on the show. Just a last send-off takeaway message you'd like to leave our audience, and then if you want to drop that link again or anything else, feel free to do so.
Okay, well, I just think that your audience should be like really excited about the future. I think that this technology is going to be fantastic. Unfortunately, when are these going to go through regulations, and when your insurance company is going to cover them is probably a long way off. But I hope that you commend the pioneers that go through early, because they're actually, you know, pioneering technology for you. And you know, get in there, you know, check out your genomics, get in with a counselor, find out what they mean, so that, you know, you don't freak out and say, oh, I have this gene and I have this risk. What does that actually mean? You know, don't go jumping off a cliff, because you can have a pretty bad set of they're called SNPs, and still never get the disease. So I want everyone to start learning about their genetics. I want them to think of the perfect app of the future, where, you know, you go in and you pick the genes you want for where you want to live, what you want to do, and you know, what your desired outcome is, and what that's going to feel like, because this is actually all about you. It's not about me. It's not about our podcast. It's really about you and you getting excited about the future.
Cool. What's the best way to support your work, Liz? Is there, you know, a place that we can check out or something we can follow to help you along the way and help you get there faster?
Oh yeah. So the website is bioviva-science.com. Then there's integrated-health.systems.com. So you can come to the websites and check that out. We've got a team that does our social media, and so we're on, you know, Facebook. I believe we're on Twitter. We're trying to hit more of the social media outlets so that people can get involved and ask us questions, because it, you know, this is your genetic future. And so you don't have to take a therapy with us. You don't have to get involved in anything that we do. But if you have a question, because you're concerned, interested, excited, you know, shoot it off, to info@bioviva-science.com. Katarina is there. And she is funny and witty, and she'll try to give you some precise answer to your question.
Yeah. I had a chat with Katarina too via email and did the same thing. And, I love her. she set this up. So I really appreciate her. Liz, thanks. Thanks again for coming on. I really do appreciate your time. I know our guys are going to love this one. So hopefully I can get you back at some point too and do a follow up. But, until then, take care and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
Hey, if you love the Elite Man podcast, one of the best things you can do to help support the show is simply tell a few of your friends about us. That's right. By sharing the Elite Man podcast with one or more of your buddies, you can give them the awesome tools and resources you get each week and help us out on top of it by sharing our message with the world. It's a win-win for all. You get to continue to be an elite man, they get to become an elite man, and we get to continue to grow and produce these fantastic episodes for everyone. So, if you're loving the show, tell a few of your friends at work to give us a listen, a few of your buddies at the barbershop, a couple of your gym friends, and of course your very best friends everywhere to listen to the Elite Man podcast. We truly appreciate you helping us out and supporting the Elite Man message. Take care and continue to be an elite man.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.